now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Steve Mira. Steve first became interested in the subject of UFOs and the paranormal at an early age, and after leaving secondary school, he studied at North Trafford College and GEC Electrical for 5 years and obtained a degree in electrical engineering. During this time, Steve began conducting research, which led to numerous investigations, which he carried out until opening Cheshire UFO Group. In 1989, Stephen worked in Essex for NATO as a telecommunications officer, after which Steve took over the running of Manchester Aerial Phenomena Investigation, formerly run by David Rees. Steve also joined BUFORA, the British UFO Research Association. And I've got all of Steve's bio information, all the relevant links. Steve's bio is quite extensive, as my listeners will soon see if they're not already familiar with Steve's work. So without any further ado, Steve Mira, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, James, and thanks for having me on.
Well, the work that you and Don Phillips are doing is what a lot of people want to know about. And I can think of no better way to start the show off than for you to discuss the work you're doing, because it's compelling on so many fronts, Steve. It's Project Doorway, whatever the term that you and Donald have for it, but that term itself speaks volumes about the work you're doing. So please, if you can elaborate.
Absolutely. Well, it's an interesting story how I came to be working with Don Phillips. I've been involved as in parapsychological work for quite some time. I started in ufology, don't get me wrong, but after doing 15 years in ufology, I kind of exhausted everything I probably could in the UK anyway. I mean, it's my mentors taught me that UFOs represent a nuts and bolts phenomena. It was a craft which was probably traveling the distances of space and so on and so forth. But as time's gone on, we've quickly realized that it's so much more than just that. And but, you know, back in the early days, this is what I was taught, and I exhausted everything I probably could in the subject. So I became interested in the paranormal fringes of ufology, because there are paranormal kind of these undertones that do take place throughout that phenomena, and certain connections. So I became interested in the paranormal. I studied parapsychology for quite a number of years. Went to university. And of course, anybody who knows they want to get involved in parapsychological research will quickly realize that they've got to have some kind of foothold on psychology and what our brains actually do, and how humans perceive and interact sometimes with things that they cannot understand. So I went to university and got a psychology degree in behavioral sciences, and I took it from there. And I was involved with a number of parapsychological departments, and I've lectured alongside some of the world leading parapsychologists throughout the world. And I was never really convinced, to be honest with you. I was always very skeptical. Don't get me wrong. I mean, yes, I have witnessed things I cannot explain. But at the same time, I was always very skeptical about people's claims without evidence. And I received a phone call one day from a gentleman called Don Phillips. Now, I had heard of Don Phillips. He was all over the internet, on YouTube mostly, kind of self-proclaiming that he had certain abilities and he had evidence. And I looked at some of those videos. And he was studying sections of instrumental transcommunication, or better known as other areas of EVP, electronic voice phenomena. And I have to say, some of them were a bit too unbelievable to believe, to be honest. But I got a phone call just out the blue one day. And he asked me if I would get in, you know, if I wanted to go down to Leicester in the UK to meet up with him and basically to see what he could do. At that point, I actually turned him down. I said, well, you know, Don, it's not really, though I am interested, but I don't really get involved in that way. I kind of look at the evidence on the outside, and, you know, I don't get too involved with people and their claims, because sometimes you're dealing with with people with very strong belief systems, and it's at the end of the day, you don't want to upset people if you consider there is a rational explanation. So I was very guarded. And at first I turned him down, but Don was persistent. Don contacted me and I said, look, okay, Don, let's put it this way. If I come down and I find anything hokey, anything, you know, that I consider is a bit fraudulent, then it won't be to your advantage, because, you know, at the end of the day, I always say it as it is. I let people know. I mean, I've got a big following over the internet. You know, I mean, is it really something you want to do? And he said, absolutely. That's exactly what I want. And that comment he made intrigued me. So, of course, I travelled to Leicester and I met with Don Phillips. Now, taking in consideration at this time, I've been involved in parapsychological and paranormal circles for probably around about 15 years. And I thought I'd pretty much seen it all. People, yes, there are some people that seem to have some abilities. But rarely are they in control. They seem to be randomized events. This is why sometimes when we take them into the scientific lab, the laboratory, that we don't seem to see these functions take place. And the reasons being is that this doesn't tend to be something that can just be called upon at a snap of a finger. It seems that, yes, some people do have abilities, but they're kind of random. They come and go when they please. And this sort of lends hand to the theory that I've had people come to me and say, this person is an amazing medium. She told me this, she told me that, and she was absolutely bang on. And then other people come and say, well, I saw that person and they're absolutely useless, which kind of led me to believe, well, maybe that, yes, people do have those abilities, but what happens under the demand of, you know, you paid somebody for a service and you go and see them and they tell you this and they tell you that. But what if it's not switched on that day? They have this, I guess, role to play that they have to produce something for that person. Just as, I guess, if media are involved and you do, it's a television show, you've got to be able to switch it on there and then. I don't think it's ever worked like that, to be honest, except until I met Don Phillips. I mean, Don Phillips is... He took me back. I have to say, I was quite surprised with his abilities as a catalyst. I can only refer to him as a catalyst. Don doesn't like to be called a medium, of course, because he do get a bit of a bad rap. But he is definitely what we might refer to in the professional terms as a catalyst. He does have the ability of clairvoyance, which consists of clairaudience and clairvoyance and clairsentient. And he has all these abilities, and they tend to be switched on exactly when he wants them to be. It's like it never really leaves him. And yes, I did witness things I couldn't explain. So since that, I ended up doing a number of investigations with Don, and we formulated a project known as Phenomena Project. And this was about really looking into the aspects of instrumental transcommunication. Who or what are we actually communicating with? And are they sincere? Is it authentic information? How is it gathered? Where is it coming from? That sort of thing. And there was a very famous experiment taking place in the UK some years back, known as the Skoll experiment. And it took place in a small town in Norfolk in the UK. And some amazing things took place within this mediumistic circle. We wanted to continue that type of study, and we did for 3 years solid. And some of the information that we obtained was very, very interesting. But it did have, and always has had, this ufological undertone to it. There seems to be connections either side of this phenomena. If you delve into it enough, you start to realize that we might be dealing with one particular phenomena that has numerous different masks. And that led me into study with another colleague of mine, which is Barry Fitzgerald. Now, some of our listeners might recognize that particular name. Barry Fitzgerald is an Irish gentleman, colleague of mine. And we've been working on another project known as Project Doorway for the last 5 years, which has kind of gone from Phenomena Project to Project Doorway, because Phenomena Project was more the paranormal side. and Project Doorway, more the ufological side. Barry's best known for his work in a TV show known as Ghost Hunters International. He was one of the lead investigators. And I believe he did that for about maybe about 5-6 years in about 30 different countries. So he was quite attuned to the paranormal, Barry. But it wasn't really his, what you might say, his pet subject. Though that he was heavily involved in the paranormal, his passion was the UFOs, the ufological side and ancient sites. And when we brought all this to the table, and of course we actually all paired together, we, Don, Barry, myself in Ireland, or a number of projects under Project under Phenomena Project. So Barry was witness to some of Don's capabilities, which he was also taken back about, and that kind of led us into Project Doorway. Now, what we wanted to do with Project Doorway, and it's quite simple, is that we know that the subjects of ufology has kind of come to a bit of a standstill. We're not really getting new information. What we tend to get is a new video or a new photograph, but it's really only adding another stone to the mountain we've already got. Are there any new ideas, research areas? Is the new information out there? And what we're trying to find and make a difference is that we want to advance the subject. We want to take ufology one step forward, because we've kind of been wrapped up in ufology since the 1940s and a bit static, to be honest with you. I mean, to be honest now, someone looking at research in general, some of the research that took place in the 1940s seems to be significantly better than some of the subject that we face today. And it was frustrating. Because, yes, we know that there is some form of, there is a phenomena out there. And what does it constitute? Do we really, really know? You know, because like I say, I mean, my mentors said, oh, well, you know, Steve, these things are in, you know, interstellar craft coming from other planets, and they're nuts and bolts phenomena and new ETs. And, but we've known that is not the actual case. We do know when you start to delve into this subject, that ufology, the sightings, the encounters, the experiences consist of so much more. They seem to be a metaphysical phenomena. There's really no evidence to say these are extraterrestrial in origin, only but that what we're told from alleged ET encounters. That's it. It's a very, if you actually really sit back and think about it, it's kind of a very humanistic approach. It's like our method of thinking about this. It's our physics. It's our ideas. Could it really be that? Is there enough evidence to support that? I mean, we do know that it's a phenomenon, but, you know, is it ever present? How long has it been here? Well, studies in Project Doorway realized very quickly that this is not a new phenomenon. And in fact, you know, it didn't start in the 1940s, which a lot of people actually studying UFOs will probably pick up a book, and it kind of starts, well, in the 1940s, it was a flying saucer UFO flap in America. Well, it goes on a lot longer than that. I mean, it goes back thousands, tens of thousands, even sometimes, if maybe even hundreds of thousands, who knows? It might even predate historical documentation, to be honest with you. I mean, we're actually looking at this because there seems to be scriptures and drawings and petroglyphs and all sorts of interesting things around the world, which might lend to the theory that this phenomena has been around for a long, long time. In fact, you know, it might have always been here. We could be the new kids on the block, in a sense of speaking. And is this phenomena, you know, I mean, we have this ruse to look up into the sky and consider, well, you know, they're out there somewhere. But this phenomena, from what we've learned, especially over the last 5 years, could be right under our noses. This phenomena could be right here, right now, right under our noses, and we wouldn't have a clue, because we are dealing with a hyper-evasive phenomena here, something that can probably cloud itself, shield itself, cloak itself, could be a present within of the, you could say, the skirting our reality. It doesn't seem that there's enough evidence to support that these UFOs are just coming backwards and forwards to Earth. I mean, in fact, the statistics carried out by Project Doorway last year in numerous countries, we calculated. We were trying to work out how often is a real UFO seen Well, we have to go off reported incidents. And unfortunately, there isn't, obviously, we can't go to every country and get statistics nowadays. But this was drawn from the countries we could do. And it turned out about 1 every 8 seconds. And it's just ridiculous. You think, well, if there's a sighting 1 every 8 seconds, that's a lot of UFOs. Now, taking into consideration, some of those are probably misidentifications. But at the same time, we're also being conservative here, because we are going to every country and getting those stats. So if 1 is seen every 8 seconds and it is a legitimate incident, then when you calculate that up, that's a huge amount of UFOs that have been reported or seen or encountered around the world on a daily basis. Where are they all coming from? Well, that amount of UFOs traveling backwards and forwards to Earth, according to SETI astronomers, which we interviewed, stated, I mean, it was a very interesting comment, actually, the May, James. It was, they said, well, space is unusually quiet. And that was an interesting comment. Space is unusually quiet. And when we talked about, I mean, of course, the SETI guys don't really want to, this is a search for extraterrestrial intelligence, of course, and they're interested in signals. They're not really so much interested in UFOs, to be honest with you. Which is strange, actually, because you think they would be. But no, they're very grounded, scientific guys, don't want to get into ufology much. But they did state, for the record, if that amount of UFOs were being seen around the planet and traveling to Earth, then there'd be a super highway of traffic out there traversing to Earth backwards and forwards. And that would leave electronic noise. And we can hear a pin drop that close to Earth, a pin drop. I said, we'd notice it. We'd see it. It would be very loud. We couldn't ignore it. That amount of electronic noise passing backwards and forwards to Earth would be easily detectable, but we don't get it. It's not there. You know, we just don't have that. And which has made us think twice about as to, well, how are these UFOs getting here? So research into this sort of kind of led us to the evidence of materialization and dematerialization of these objects, this sudden manifestation sightings. These, it would seem, you know, a lot of UFOs, if not all of them, because sometimes we don't see the initiation of when they arrive or even depart in some occasions, but we do see the traversity of these objects through our airspace. But just on occasion we see what seems to be the materialization or dematerialization of these objects. Where are they going? How are they getting here? You know, where did they leave to? Which led us into talks with physicists about reality. Now, it's a funny thing, reality. I mean, when we talk about what we're consciously aware of in our reality, well, you know, humans live in a three-dimensional world. If we take, for an example, a snail, an example. Well, we know that snails kind of live in a one-dimensional world. They're not aware of the past. They're not aware of of the future, what might come. But they're only aware of what is happening right at that moment in time. You know, other insects are allegedly live in two dimensions, such as ants and things like that. They are aware of past incidents as well as present incidents. But us humans, we're aware of past, present and future. But what we've got to consider is that, is there something extra? Is there another one? Is there a multiple dimension? And what you might refer to is an alternative realities. And within them lies the paranormal, the supernatural, the ufological, the metaphysical, the spiritual. Everything that is wrapped up in this banner of the unknown. It could be that, according to physicists, that realities are very, very close to ours. It could be that we have these crossover points, and not just from the paranormal, but probably from the, it's very plausible, but from the ufological aspects as well. So when we look at the subject as a whole, James, we're kind of saying, well, you know, we've got these dividing boxes, and maybe, just maybe, why are we not getting heads on this subject of ufology? Because it's been going on long enough. There's countless surveys and in scientific inquiries into this, but it tends to be the more humanistic side of research. It's like, what did it consist of? What is the technology? You know, and those type of experiences which get looked into very scientifically. However, all the other aspects, be it the other areas of research, paranormal and metaphysical and so on and so forth, don't get involved. And they have never been involved. They've had these dividing boxes, which the paranormal guys, the ghost guys, kind of go, well, you know, I'm kind of not really interested in aliens. And then you've got the UFO guys going, oh, I'm not interested in the ghost stuff, you know. But to be honest with you, I think if we're really going to get a head start on trying to answer some of these questions of what ufology consists of, we have to involve those other subjects. We cannot have those dividing walls. We've got to break them down, because there is paranormal attributes to ufology, and there is metaphysical phenomena and spiritual and supernatural involved. It's kind of a whole genre of things, and just one section of that is ufology. So what we've done is we kind of broke all those doors or those restricting walls down within these subjects and brought them all together under the heading of phenomenology, which basically is, it's quite simple, it's say it as it is. You know, if people are saying, well, you know, I had a UFO event, but what was really interesting is that after I had it, you know, we had about a week of poltergeist-type disturbances. Say it as it is. I mean, Project Blue Book, most of our listeners will know what, you know, have heard about Project Blue Book, especially after the TV show, which was released not long back, that there was even Blue Book cases where the people who had these encounters had also paranormal attributes to these incidents. But Blue Book didn't write it up, because the Blue Book officers thought, I'm not getting into this ghosty stuff. We'll just write that in and put that in there. Just a UFO side, please, guys. Nothing more, nothing less. We're not getting a full picture here. Most people will probably say now that through the research that's been gathered over the years, that UFOs consist of much more than just some type of interplanetary craft traveling to Earth from the distances of space. I mean, just doesn't seem right. It seems more our thinking. And we came across, what was really interesting is that significant studies in this phenomena, which has been taking place by numerous departments throughout the US for many years. When the CIA got involved in advanced studies of the ufological phenomena, there were certain documents which were created around about the 1970s, and through their Freedom of Information or leaked information, documents were obtained. And there were some interesting references on these documents. And one of those references was an acronym of WSFM. And researchers, I didn't have a clue, James, to be honest. They were sort of thinking, well, what is that WSFM? Is it some type of scientific project? Is it a location? Is it some type of base? What is it? Project name? And for years, they were banging their head off the wall trying to work out what did WSFM mean in conjunction to the CIA's investigation of the ufological phenomena. And it was only some years afterwards that people who had left the CIA, whistleblowers, came forward and eventually said, well, you know, we can tell you what WSFM means. And it basically, I mean, considering that we were all thinking it was some type of scientific project name, it only means weird science and freaking magic. And the reason for all that was is because even the CIA guys couldn't really get their head around the metaphysics of this phenomena. You know, it is not just a craft. There is aspects to this phenomena that just might we fall under the magic realm, you know. And of course, they came up with this jokingly weird science and freaking magic acronym, which really puzzled researchers for quite some time. But as the phenomenon has progressed and people have looked at it more and more depth, we are finding lots and lots of things which are very interesting. And this is one of the outlines of that, is the conscious connection between UFOs and the observers. There seems to be at certain times a conscious connection between those that are seeing these objects and, of course, the phenomena itself. We know this from pilot incidents. I mean, there has been shoot down orders given, believe it or not, from American pilots, even British pilots, have been told to literally open fire on these objects on occasion. And the first thing that they try and attempt to do is trying to get a weapon lock on these things. And as soon as they are just about to get weapon lock, they'll always find that this object, they do unusual maneuvers, evasive maneuvers, just prior to weapon lock. And then they'll try again, and then all of a sudden it'll do an evasive maneuver. And this goes on and on. And the pilots themselves have stated, you know, on countless times that it's really weird. It's as if they knew what we were going to do. They knew which way we were going to go. They knew where we were going to end up. You know, and it's just things like that. And you think, well, they're reading the intent of the pilots. How do we get a head start on this one? Well, that's really, really difficult. Now, if they have the capabilities of reading the intent of the pilots, in other words, a conscious connection between the phenomena and the witnesses, then we also have to take in consideration normal people, you know, people which are just out there and see these things. There is loads of people that come forward and say, do you know what? I didn't see a damn thing until I put my camera away. And that's really frustrating, as you can, you know, as an investigator. But sometimes that happens. You know, you might be set up with all your equipment, and it's a lovely starlit night. You're in an area where these things have been reported. Nothing happens, and then you decide to, you know, put your cameras in your trunk, and as soon as you shut that door, then things might be seen. That does happen. It gets reported all the time. It's happened to ourselves during investigations. How is that? Why is that? Well, I think in some cases, because there's a conscious connection between the phenomena and the witnesses, that sometimes they just don't want videoing or don't want being photographed. Other times, I don't think they really care. Other times, they're probably not aware. But certainly, some of the times, they are. And they demonstrate this many times. People have reported that many, many times. But of course, you know what, we are dealing with a hyper-invasive phenomena. It sometimes has the capabilities of cloaking itself in the infrared realm. We know this by dual camera systems. Now, one side of the camera films normal. The other side of the camera films infrared with an infrared filter. And sometimes you will see that, yes, you cannot see this with the naked eye, but it's there nonetheless in the infrared. And it would mean then that these intelligences, whatever they represent, know the limitations of human eyesight, and they know that it's not so easy for us to see in that realm of infrared, which of course they're going to utilize to be hyper-invasive. They've pretended to be satellites. They've crossed the sky at the same speed and the same pace as satellites, sometimes clearly being identified as satellites until they suddenly stop or take a turn, you know. They've also spun in certain places in the sky, which you would think, from our perspective, that is a star. It's part of a constellation, when in fact it isn't. You know, we've seen objects tracking from the north over the UK and suddenly stopped within the constellation, lost amongst the stars. It's up there. It's sat there. But you just can't tell. You know, I mean, you'd have to be some real expert to be able to identify every star in the night sky and go, hang on a second, that one's a little bit unusual. What's that one doing there? You know, that happens. I mean, people have been thinking and looking at stars until they start to move. And I've seen these objects come tracking in and suddenly start within a constellation and lost. You know, literally, you can't take your eyes off these things, or they're lost amongst the stars in some cases. And yes, and they can stay there for hours on length. We've got videos of these things tracking in, suddenly stopping, and literally just sat there for 3 hours. You know, just, I don't know what they're doing. But nonetheless, though, I mean, anybody who was passing by would never have known that. We would never have looked up and considered that star something unusual. It's very, very difficult, as you can well imagine. You know, so we're dealing with that type of phenomena where it's like I say, it's hyper-invasive. It's very clever. They know how we observe the skies. They know how to hide themselves. But they do have a number of other traits, and some of those traits are kind of giving off an infrared cloak, but also an infrasound frequency. Now, Steven Spielberg, actually, from his Close Encounters movie, actually, he used about 80-odd different cases, some of which were from Blue Book, to kind of show throughout the film and get a real good understanding of what the film... He really wanted to represent the UFO side of the story within this film, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He really wanted to use real incidents, and he brought them through into the film because he had many reports that he was going through, and thought, yes, I want to include this, and this. Now, I often ask to people, you know, do you remember the poltergeist scene in Close Encounters? And they go, what? I don't remember that. Well, yeah, I mean, when these objects were coming down, and obviously in an attempt to abduct the little boy from his house, all hell broke loose. Most of our listeners will probably remember that, you know, that the kitchen exploded into life. Taps turned on, fridges jumped around, hoovers turned on, things moved around on their own. Well, that was a real incident. That was a family. I believe it was a farm, actually, and they were having these ufological experiences, but they were having all this poltergeist stuff take place. And Stephen had obviously, and his researchers had found that information and thought, if this truly represents something part of the phenomenon, then I want to include it in the movie. And he did. He purposely put that in. But he also purposely put in the evidence in support of these objects occasionally giving off an infrasonic frequency. Suddenly, people have reported this countless times when suddenly the environment literally just stops. It just, the sound, the insects, the birds, it just is void of any sound whatsoever. And then, bang, you have this UFO experience. So we had this scene in the movie when a UFO suddenly came over a particular vehicle, and we remember that famous scene when light shone down. But just prior to that incident happened, all the insects stopped. Again, Spielberg put that into the movie, because what's basically happening there is that an infrasonic frequency is literally imminent. And when it happens, the local insects of that area, usually crickets and things like that, even birds in some cases, just fall quiet, because the sound of an infrasonic frequency is like a warning to them. It's like a predatory warning. So they fall completely silent very quickly. And then these incidents happen. So it's kind of evidence that there is an infrasonic frequency sometimes emitted from some of these objects. And it kind of ties into some of these events. So we now know that, you know, obviously they can manipulate light, they can manipulate sound, and of course some of these seem to have the capabilities of a conscious connection. There are people which have kind of had one foot in the other realm. You know, there was actually I can name two women well known, which Dorothy Izzat from 1974, American Housewife, and of course Stella Lansing from 1961. Now, what was interesting about these two women were that they were both using 8mm cinefilm cameras, and suddenly they jump up, you know, from their sitting room and say, "Do you know, I've just got to go outside. I've got this feeling. I've just got to film." And lo and behold, they capture UFOs, strange beings, you know, and nothing was visible with the naked eye, but the cameras recorded it. And not just that, recorded seemingly apparitions and faces of people and places, and it was just very, very weird. And it can only be assumed that maybe they had some connection to another reality. They were somehow peering into this this phenomena. And, of course, it was represented throughout the paranormal and ufological. Now, scientists got hold of all this material, and they just could not conclude how on earth they were managing to do this. But they had, obviously, some type of connection with the phenomena. And, of course, sometimes people are toyed with. You know, when we knew, I've been involved now for 37 years overall in this subject. And it's took me from general witnesses, around the UK reporting things to visiting some of the biggest locations in the world and going through research and documents. And some of that can be quite tedious, and some of it shows clearly demonstrates that the phenomena it certainly has the upper hand, such as the Skinwalker Ranch incident. Now, though those incidents have been going on in a ranch in the US for quite some time, it is now operable again that there are new people in there. It's under new management, and research is taking place again in that location. But I've been told, you know, that once again the phenomena runs rings around the researchers there, and they're just not getting what they want. Now, within the subject of ufology, there seems to be an outer circle of ufology. And that is kind of a lot of your lecturers, which are out there, you know. I mean, I lecture all over the world alongside, you know, Richard Dolan and Linda Morton Howe and so on and so forth. These are the biggest lecturers in the world on these subjects, this subject matter. However, there is also an inner circle of ufology, which doesn't really get brought out to these conferences. And I can tell you what, from what I know, is that within that inner circle is information that is not getting out. It's passed around other people within that inner circle. It's kind of, you've managed to be able to join the club kind of situation. George Knapp, you know, a newspaper, a news reporter from Las Vegas, who's very well known for his connections with Skinwalker Ranch and Bob Lazar and so on and so forth. He knows a considerable amount of information, which is really the general public might not be aware or be prepared for, to be honest with you. I've also been in this inner circle for, I can only say from now, about 18 months. When I was over in LA last year lecturing, George travelled all the way from Las Vegas to LA. He'd driven, apparently, just to have a chat with us about our research, because he knew that our research tied into some of the US defence research, which is currently taking place in regarding the phenomena, including how people who have experiences with UFOs, many of them suffer from anemia afterwards. There's an iron content taken out from the blood, which is very intriguing. You start to look into the reasons why that might be happening. But there is this inner circle of knowledge about what truly is represented by this phenomenon. Well, I can tell you that from what I know is that the research, the heaviest research in UFOs, also borders seances, supernatural encounters, crypto encounters, and I mean the sightings of beasts, you know, walking on two legs, or even Bigfoot on occasions. You know, there is a connection with those type of things. There is a connection with disappearances. Now, I'm a very fond, you know, of Paul. What's his name now?
David Paulides.
David Paulides, that's right. David Paulides' work is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I think that he's starting to realise what we realised quite a number of years ago, is that the disappearances are happening in a certain locations. And these locations we have now realised are in positive magnetic anomalies. Now, I can tell you what those actually represent. It's intriguing because for many years, we've all heard about portals and stargates and all these wonderful science fiction terms. And in association to ancient sites and UFOs and things like that. And of course, for me, as a researcher, I've kind of shrugged my shoulders and thought, well, it's basically a scientific and science fiction concept. But is it really something real? You know, is it a reality? However, I was surprised over the last few years of what we've learned within Project Doorway that, yes, here is a reality to this. There's a scientific, evidential reality to this. And not only that, but NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, launched a project called the MMS mission about 5 years ago to study what they refer to as portals. The scientific name is electron diffusion regions, X points, and they're out there in space, which they're investigating. And these are sustained, large portals. They're traveling from one. This is something that could travel potentially from one place to another. And it seems that the evidence is pointing that some of these are directly connected to the surface of the sun, 93 million miles away. And if that is the case, then now we're starting to realize, well, maybe this phenomenon is utilizing a different way of getting here. Are they utilizing certain key areas? So what we actually did is we used mapping software tied in with two satellites. One is a gravitational anomaly satellite. The other one is a Earth magnetic anomaly satellite. And utilizing certain filters, we managed to have the maps up in front of us of the globe. And we outlined the most significant positive magnetic areas on planet Earth. And surprisingly, it was a huge, huge correlation between significant UFO encounters and these locations. All the biggest ones, all the major ones you can think of, you know, they all are in those locations. Is that chance? Well, statistically speaking, no, it shouldn't be. But then when we start to look at the disappearances, and I mean, these aren't just normal disappearances. These are strange, profound disappearances that we just no explanation for. I mean, your colleague might be 10 foot behind you and chatting, you know, and you turn around for a second, you turn back and bang, he's gone. That's it. Gone. Never to be seen again. You know, there are occasions when, you know, people have disappeared so profoundly that they don't even know how to explain how the incident happened. And sometimes there's usually nothing left, you know, of that person in that environment. You know, no idea as to where they're going. They never turn up. And these are what we refer to as strange or profound disappearances. Now, when we correlate these strange and profound disappearances, we know this to be a conservative figure by the research we've carried out, is 4.3 million people worldwide. There's enough reports to say there's 4.3 million people worldwide. That's about the population of New Zealand, isn't it? I think. I don't think it's far off. But that is a huge amount. And that's conservative. That are conservative figures. Documents aren't kept. Profound disappearances, the documents are not kept. True statistics aren't found. And these are the ones that we have found. So we have to consider that this is very conservative, these figures. But yes, people are disappearing. And in these anomalous areas, these areas where people have reported strange lights, cryptid sightings, paranormal occurrences, you know, humming, buzzing strange sounds, shimmers of light on the ground. And we're also seeing other areas of profound stuff taking place in near rock cliffs, boulder fields, mountainsides, hillsides, volcanoes. You know, it seems that this phenomena, which we have tracked and scoped and video recorded, does have the capabilities to traversing what was initially thought to be three forms of flight, which is known as transmedium travel. It isn't transmedium travel. It's actually more than that. I think it was ATIP, which was this Pentagon program to look into the aviation threat of UFOs, listed these five objectives, one of which was transmedium travel. Transmedium travel would be that these UFOs have the capability of traveling A, in space, B, in the skies, and C, under the water, hence three being transmedium travel. But there is evidence now to support that these things, whatever they represent, are metaphysical. And they have no problem at traversing into the land. We've filmed objects going in and coming out, and we don't know how they're doing it. They're clearly some type of bright, intelligent, maneuvering object that goes into the woods and doesn't come out. It goes into the forests. It goes into the ground. It's seen coming out of hillsides, boulder fields, rock cliffs. How are they doing that? Well, it is assumed that this metaphysical phenomena has this space and time bubble around it. Therefore, it doesn't have the effects of what's around it affect it, the inertias and things like that. So the capability of this, you know, being entering into the sea or maybe even entering into the ground on some occasions might be theoretically possible. We are dealing with theoretical science, of course, because we just don't know enough. But we have enough evidence to say, yes, this phenomena can do that. And we do not begin to understand how they actually are doing that. And we're back to that terminology, that weird frigging magic, you know, we don't know. And I don't think for one second that the governments of the world know. I don't think we have all the answers. And I think for a long, long time, we've been struggling to get that. We've got some. I believe we have some answers, James, and some of that maybe technology may be introduced into other areas of military applications and so on. But do we have a really good understanding of how they may be traversing? Are they really extraterrestrials? I mean, if we go back to John Keel, now, some of our listeners might remember the name John Keel. He was a prolific researcher. He wrote a number of books, and he was probably best known for investigating the Mothman prophecies at Point Pleasant in the US, which, of course, appeared as a movie with Richard... Richard... I can't remember his name. But it was a good film. And it was really quite close to the point as well. But John wrote a book some years ago in the 70s called The Eighth Tower. And after doing years and years of research in the paranormal and the ufological, he concluded that we were dealing with not extraterrestrials, we were dealing with ultra-terrestrials. This is what his terminology was. Now, to you and me, ultra-terrestrials, the terminology today would be interdimensionals, beings from other realities, not necessarily from that planet and this planet and so on and so forth, though that we are allegedly told this. But then we have to consider how authentic is the information that would be delivered by these so-called entities. We have all these thousands of incidents that have allegedly taken place where there's been contact with these different varied beings, taken into 20,000 varied beings all around the planet have been described, you know, over 300 different locations in outer space, 30 varied degrees themselves. You know, I mean, does this phenomenon really, or is it really that varied? Does it have just one mask, you know, and we're seeing all these variations of it? Is there multiple ways to see this, perceive this phenomenon? We don't know. We certainly, you know, our minds and our perceptions could certainly be tapped into. We know that phenomena seems to have the capabilities to manipulate us in that manner. But we're delivered this one thing over and over again, and it's that is the conservation of Earth, the conservation of the planet. Look after the planet. You know, it's we gotta look after it. And I get it. If that is the case and that is what's being said, I do get it. I say, okay, we can see that, you know, how terrible we are on this planet. You know, we're like a virus pulling things apart and damaging the Earth. We do it. We just can't. Some people just cannot help themselves. But at the end of the day, is that concern for humanity? Or is it just that they are concerned about the planet? Do they need the planet? Do they use the planet? Is the planet have key locations where they can traverse backwards and forward? Is it that the concern for them? Or is it really us? Do they care about us? Well, if we say these entities have been around for as long as we can imagine, have they demonstrated that they care for us? You know, I mean, they've led us war against each other for thousands upon thousands of years. The most ridiculous amount of people have been killed during such events, you know, and it's without intervention. You know, I really don't think that it's really about us guys. I think it's probably about the Earth, you know? And if that is the question, then what is it? What is it is that they're concerned about? You know, we may going to be making environmental changes on the Earth. It's going to affect them in some way. Maybe, possible. But it seems that we give, it's like this rule book. It's like, hey guys, if you have a UFO, if you have your UFO come down and you experience a human, this is the line to tell them. This is the thing to say. And it would seem that this is the delivered over and over again, and not just by one type of entities, all most of them have had the same type of thing to say, you know, and I'm very suspicious, to be honest with you.
It's, you know, like a soundbite that they just throw out to people.
It is. Right? It is, yeah. It's, you hear and see the same thing over again. And this isn't just traversing over years. This is years and years of this information. You know, and I don't think it's about us. I don't think that, you know, these entities, whatever they represent, really care about us, but I think probably about the Earth. But what is interesting is that from the early days, and the earliest days of seances and mediumistic circles, even if we go back to the famous occultist, Aleister Crowley, I think it was 1908, he started practicing a certain type of medium channeling and contacted an entity which appeared apparently in front of him. This is in his bio, in his documents, in his research, his books, his biography. And for the very first time, this entity literally kicked his butt. I mean, he was not in control. It scared him. And he had never felt and experienced this before. And he described this entity as a small, well, it looked like a grey. Be honest with you, large head, pale complexion, and it described itself as an interdimensional being from another reality, and I think his name was Lamb, I believe, from the biography that he wrote. He said that he was named Lamb, And this isn't the first time this has happened. This happened during the Skull experiments in the UK as well, when mediumistic circles were invaded. Okay, yes, they're getting constant communications from something. We don't know what it wants. We don't know what they are. Are they spirits? Well, the problem is that when involved in doing mediumistic circles, James, is that, and we know this from practices ourselves in within Phenomena Project, that sometimes they deliver the answers before the questions are given. And if that is the case, then they know what we're thinking. And if they know what they're thinking, then they can tell us whatever we want to hear. So if we really think that we're communicating with Uncle Albert that passed away 5 years, then it will be. You know, do we really know? Are we really, you know, is it exactly what we think it is? Are these spirits, or is it something else? And the, and this is why the parapsychology departments around the world and throughout the UK, some of the leading departments will say there is no evidence of afterlife. There is evidence, of course, that they are aware of this. There's evidence of communications with something of intelligence which interacts with us and can give us information, sometimes accurate information at the speed of light, sometimes information which might be prior to, you know, 18 months into the future, at least 18 months into the future. It seems that they might be aware of future events. And also information that has not even been asked. It's actually obtained from the individuals themselves. Just as a UFO phenomenon reads the intent of the pilots, this phenomenon reads the information from the individuals sat in the seance. So, can we honestly say we are being given an authentic information during seances and mediumistic circles? We don't know. We will never know. There's no way of absolutely 100% saying this is not trickery. This is not something to pretending. Or is it manifested by ourselves through the actions? The entity comes along and just makes it what it is from our information. We don't know. We don't even start to begin to understand the physics and where these communications are even coming from. But we get told all sorts of things from entities, from other planets, hence the Vril Society, which were doing exactly the same thing just prior to the Second World War, and information in regards to anti-gravity research was taking place and obtained and passed to certain officials which were going off and trying to manufacture these things. This is with the, of course, the scientific German anti-gravity research development teams. Then where is that information coming from? How are we getting it? And is there a ploy to change things? I mean, this phenomenon has interacted with us many times over the years and seemingly changed history. I mean, Alexander the Great, you know, besieging a city. And this is very well documented, you know. He's, you know, trying to besiege a city, 50-foot walls, couldn't get in. He had it. And all of a sudden, this particular day, these flaming shields turn up, scaring his war elephants. He had to postpone a battle one day because of these things. They turned up the second day and fired a beam of light down at these walls, and the walls crumbled, allowing Alexander the Great to raid this, you know, besieged city. It's very well documented piece of information that. What the hell was that? What does that mean? You know, no different than Columbus off the, you know, when trying to discover America, strange lights on the surface of the water, which apparently led him to the discovery of America. I mean, you know, there are thousands. These are just a few of them, but there are thousands and thousands of incidents which have a historical connotation to these things. In other words, have they manipulated, changed, altered history in some cases? Maybe. You know, we have to say these have been ever-present through as long as man's been around. So this is not a new phenomenon. But they have many, many masks, you know, and we do know that from Ireland, from the Fae, the fairies. I mean, they were never fairies. That's more of a Disney character, really, to be honest with you, Tinkerbell. But you talk to the Irish and you go back in history, the Fae, the She, they were fearful characters, you know, and could be seen in numerous different formats, you know, small white beings, dwarven counters, you know, gentry-type beings as well. You know, all sorts of different things. There was perceived to be numerous different things, but were associated to UFOs or flying trains, as described in the Dublin records of UFO encounters dating back to the early 1800s, that these were considered to be flying trains which would come down from the sky, controlled landings into lakes, steam would fly up, and of course disappear underwater, never to be found. exactly the same thing as the ghost rockets of the 1940s over Sweden. Did exactly the same thing. These cylindrical objects controlled landing into lakes and disappeared. I mean, in fact, the army and the military were called out several times to try and find them, to dredge the lakes and rivers. Nothing ever was ever found there. You know, but these spates of incidents don't seem to change. The phenomenon doesn't seem to change its presence much throughout the years. It seems to be the same representation. It's not like there's a, and it's not like a new vehicle, is it? You know, a new version comes out, you know, and you can see the significant differences over the last 30 years in vehicles. But we have this same phenomena always ever present in the same manner. You know, it is quite profound, and I don't think we have all the answers. But what seems to be, and like what John Keel said, these ultra-dimensionals or interdimensionals, it's the same thing that Jacques Vallée also said. Now, Dr. Jacques Vallée is a prolific researcher. He's been involved many, many years. He also did work with Alan J. Hynek, and he was on a number of scientific inquiry teams about the subjects of UFOs. He said many years ago, this phenomena represents itself within the paranormal and the metaphysical, the profound. And, of course, might actually not ever have been extraterrestrial in origin, but perceived to have been. You know, if they are ETs, then, you know, I don't think they're traveling the distances of space in a linear fashion, probably jumping from one place to the other. Maybe even utilizing our stars. You know, our own sun is photographed
and videoed. I absolutely think that's the case. I don't think it's necessarily mutually exclusive where it's either interdimensional or extraterrestrial, because given the head start some of these ET races have had technologically and intellectually, some of them may have figured out how to traverse vast distances without resorting to linear travel. So
yes,
I think that the stars and the sun, like the imagery we've seen from the SOHO a Sun Observatory with these huge planet-sized craft, just fleets of them sometimes. It's quite possible not only planets, but stars themselves are part of this Stargate, if you will. Yep.
I will agree. I mean, you know, they're plentiful around the sun's surface. This is what we're finding. And there seems to be some form of traversing between these locations on Earth, which are hotbeds of activity, like your Skinwalker Ranch, for an example. Sudden manifestations of these objects just seem to appear out the sky from nowhere. And not just that, you know, other manifestations do take place there. But the sun and around its surface, we've had objects, we've got film footage and objects of things coming out of the sun. I mean, you know, how does that work? And maybe the stars, what we look up in the night sky, are the doorways from one place to another. And maybe that the traversing of these locations is simply from jumping from star to star. As NASA would put it, these electron diffusion regions all over the universe. And that is simply just passing through one doorway to another. You know, and that's what makes us consider then, okay, so if we are dealing with extraterrestrials, it's no linear travel. It's kind of our thinking that, you know. But then we are dealing with a metaphysical phenomenon. It seems to jump in and out of our realities, you know. So
absolutely. And that's confounded so many of these nuts and bolts researchers over the years, Steve. And I almost look at it, this kind of Stargate system, if you will, this portal system, is almost like you can draw a parallel, an analogy with, you know, the neural pathways of neurology of the brain. They're just these ganglions and these synapses that go every which way. And some of these beings and some of these cryptids have figured out where the permeable points are between our reality and the next. Well, we're just getting started. I just sat here the whole time.
Well, you know, the last piece I can only give you on this section here, which confirms is a connection between what you might refer to as the paranormal and the ufological. Three years ago on a poltergeist case, we had an apportation of a mug that appeared from absolutely nowhere. It was one of the person that owned them. She owned a set of four, luckily for us. So we managed to analyze the apported mug against the normal mug. They were not the same. They feel the same. They weigh the same. They look the same. It wasn't the same. Under the microscope, it's completely different. And a diathermic reaction has been applied. Now, we referenced this name before, diathermic reaction. Diathermic reaction. Where have we seen this before? And it was actually dug out, eventually we found it, was dug out of the papers of some research that was carried out 5 years prior to that in a UFO manifestation close to the ground that affected the plants. This is known as biological traumatology on plants. the referencing was there. Exactly the same diathermic reactions were found in the plants. So we figured out that the sudden manifestation of a mug, be it a poltergeist case, and the sudden manifestation of a UFO close to ground somehow are utilizing the same physics, but we don't know what. This is unknown physics, we should say. We're going to have to rewrite the book. We literally have to empty the glass of knowledge we have, you know, what we have, and fill it up with all this new type of science, really, to be honest with you, to get a head start on this phenomena. But it would seem that these connections between the paranormal and ufological are very much present and always have been. But then really the problem is that we've just divided the subjects over the years. So what we're trying to do is just gain a better advancement in regarding the subject matter and trying to get some answers and new research out there, because I think really we're not going to get an understanding of what these concepts really, you know, what all this phenomenon represents until we start looking at it as a whole. I think we have to do that. It's far too much time has just been spent on a video and a photograph and not really gaining us any advancement of study within the program.
We see it at both ends of the spectrum, Steve, where on the one hand, the nuts and bolts types are spinning their wheels. Oh, look, we have another landing trace sample. We have another video, right? It doesn't advance the research one iota. And on the other hand, what you talked about earlier, the at times lack of discernment, especially exhibited by the New Agers, where all this channeled information comes in from this star system and that and this ET group and that.
I know. I see it all the time, James. I mean, I lecture all around the world, and I have to lecture alongside people which, well, I mean, for me being a science guy, I don't see any form of evidence. I have to, just as the people are visiting these conferences, have to rely on just the sole belief that this individual is telling the truth. Well, to them, they probably might even be telling the truth to that individual. I have to look at the evidence at the end of the day. And of course, there is evidence out there. You've got to go and obtain it some way, some means of trying to advance it. But I see that all the time. I'm not saying that, you know, conscious connection. Yeah, I'm aware of conscious connection, absolutely, with this phenomenon. I've witnessed it myself firsthand. But at the same time, is the information credible? You know, or are we just giving what we want to hear?
Yes. And when we delve into this, and you just share whatever you feel comfortable with in the second segment, Steve, because I know ongoing project, ongoing research, you have to hold certain cards close to the vest. I totally understand that, because we have to maintain the integrity of the project. But that's a key point you just made there. Anyhow, we reached the end of a fascinating segment. Don't even really want to end it, but we have to. Steve, for the benefit of our listeners, how do they get a hold of you, and what are your websites?
Absolutely. I mean, you see, we release a magazine every month, end of every month, known as Phenomena Magazine, which is available at phenomenamagazine.co.uk. It's in 12 languages now in 4 countries, so that's just information we want to send out for free every month to let people know what's going on. We also have Zohar Entertainment Group, and that's ZoharStargate.com. Now, we have a number of YouTube channels which are listed under Zohar, which cover all this type of subjects. And we'll find a lot of our research is being given out over YouTube to allow people to see what we're doing. And try and progress the study of some of this phenomenon as well, so they can contact me through there. And of course, there's a MAPIT website, Manchester Aerial Phenomenon Investigation Team, and that's at www.mapit.kk5, which was 2005.org. And there's references to investigations. We've been involved in lots of different things over the years. But most of the time, people just tend to Google me, Steve Merrer, because I've been involved in so many different things over the years. There's lots of different aspects of research that I've been involved in that people particularly like. That's usually probably the best way. And the last but least is I've been involved with official spokesman for a number of TV shows and movies and things. The latest one, I'm working with a gentleman, great guy called Alan Stilberman, and of course Jack Vallée on a new documentary which is due out very shortly in October, and it's called Witness to Another World. And again, it shows that not only a paranormal, but a ufological encounter as well. And that's a fascinating case.
Well, we've reached the end of a fascinating first segment with our guest, Steve Merrer. You've been listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.